So am I still waiting, waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
I changed my mind. Let him go. What the fuck is wrong with you, man? I said I changed my mind. Let him go. Let him go.
Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck myself?
Yeah, I'm taking him in.
You're taking him in. Go fuck
myself. I'm fucking taking him in.
You're taking him
in. He's worth $100,000. I'm taking him in.
Am I not speaking English?
I don't give a fuck what you're speaking, you big goofy motherfucker. I said I'm taking him.
Tell me to go fuck myself? I thought we were friends.
What?
What? You're sorry? Apology not fucking accepted. Fucking piece of shit.
Pop guns and rock jewels. Meanwhile, burning in hell. Child, be the center of attention. Show me love, hope I get the blessing. Got holes for every home and never fuck their own. Even though the feds gotta sweat.
It's review away, everybody. John Pollock and Wei Ting here. And Wei, this is going to be a stacked, Chael Sonnen-filled edition of review away.
What?
Because we are unnaturally high on testosterone.
Oh, is
in
that
this edition?
Okay, I get it. Took me a while.
We've got more feedback than any week for this past week's contest when it comes to tasteless angles in professional wrestling that have changed your viewing of wrestling. Whether you have continued or not, angles that have just disgusted you.
And it appears there have been many, many, many wrestling fans who have been disgusted over many angles over the years. And I didn't really read through all of the angles myself, just did a brief browsing.
Yes.
And I became very, very depressed just browsing our Facebook group this past week.
We're going to get into all of that. But, of course, as promised, me and Wei sat through The Wrong Side of Town this past week.
Yes, a DVD gift courtesy of our listener, Mark Cardoso, who presented with us with a custom-made DVD package when we were out in Hamilton for that Raw House show. Gave us this disc, and it features this movie, The Wrong Side of Town, starring David Bautista.
Yes, if you looked at the movie posters, and they are available on the pictures section of ReviewAway.com, you would assume Dave Bautista all over this movie. And we'll get to that in the feedback about some tension coming out of this straight-to-DVD release.
Mm-hmm.
So let's chat about this, Wei. The movie starts off, and I didn't know if there was a preview before the movie or what, but all of a sudden there's this guy by a river who is tied to a chair being beaten by these, I suppose, mob or these gangsters. And they are punching him, and they are also recording this with an old 90s recording device. This
yes.
Kind of out of left field to start the movie.
Well, this starts out like any straight-to-DVD action movie, basically. It's a scene where this badass, this evil, evil man, is about to kill some innocent
Nikki
person. Yes.
Then my DVD skipped, and it goes to the opening where we've got this unbelievable cheesy song called, wait for it, Wrong Side of Town. This was like some kind of like 70s kind of hip hop.
Like an updated type of James Bond.
Yes.
Type of theme,
yeah.
So.
It was very weird. It was something you'd expect Pam Grier to be starring in.
Right. Okay. But the titles look cool. They spent some money on doing those. They paid some cool After Effects kid some money to make these. It was good.
Despite the billing, it is actually Rob Van Dam who is the central character in this movie, playing ex-Navy SEAL Bobby Kalinowski. And our first scene, Wei, that introduces us to the Kalinowski family, Rob is using a chainsaw as he's doing some Saturday afternoon gardening when his wife yells from their backyard.
Well, first he's using a chainsaw, and then the chainsaw doesn't work, so he uses his bare hands to chop the wood. Using a karate chop. I don't know how you missed it. This was right there.
Oh my God.
The chainsaw doesn't work, so instead he uses a karate chop to chop the wood.
Wow. So then we see this lifeless body floating in
the
couple's pool.
Yeah.
And the wife yells that it's Brianna, who I do not know who this is right now. Rob takes a break from his chopping, jumps into the pool, pulls her out, And then she laughs. It was all an elaborate joke on her parents, Brianna pretending to be drowning in the pool. Mm-hmm. Because, you see, she's a drama student, and she's getting ready for her big tryout or something later this week. And yeah. The parents just kind of laugh at this.
I thought it was odd, the casting of Brianna, because Rob Van Dam is how old? How old is he?
Mid-30s? 36?
36. This girl, honestly, she
looked
was
like
16.
22.
Yeah, she looked, yes, 22. They cast some, like, you know, hot teenage girl, I suppose, and for a second I thought she was Rob Van Dam's love interest, but it turns out that it's actually his daughter, and just a little bit creepy, because you see this girl in a bikini and all that throughout the whole movie, and it's his daughter.
Yes. Then all of a sudden, the new neighbors, Clay and Elise, are moving in. Way, and what do you do the day you move in? Why, of course, you need to get a hammer. So they come over, they introduce themselves to Bobby Kalinowski and his wife, whose name I did not get during this time. And they ask for a hammer, and somehow this transitions into, let's go to a nightclub tonight.
Yeah, and Rob Van Dam's character is one that never likes to venture out downtown. He likes to stay in the suburbs, doesn't like downtown, but they convince him anyway via their awful, awful dialogue.
And Rob's awful, awful delivery. Oh, this man is so wooden.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he's a fantastic, fantastic wrestler, but, oh my God, not a good actor. I'm sorry, Rob Van Dam.
So all of a sudden, we're at this club, and they're seated. And then we go to a scene where the owner of the club, Seth Borders, is with his brother, Ethan, who is a cokehead, and reminded me of the Seth Green character from Can't Hardly Wait, complete with, like, the aviator. Remember those things that were in, like, for 10 seconds in the late 90s?
Goggles.
Those goggles.
Like
everyone wore those stupid
Grandmaster
goggles.
Grandmaster Sexay goggles for you wrestling fans.
Oh, all these people walked around with those goggles, but, like, you would never have a situation where you would put them on.
I've never ever seen somebody walk around with
those goggles. Saw plenty in that.
Besides
that
on TV.
FUBU and those goggles were a 1998 fashion trend that I never understood.
Ridiculous.
So those are our heels.
So Ethan is basically this young punk kid brother of this boss, Seth, who was the guy in the opening video that kills the guy.
Yep.
And so Seth is about to leave the club to Ethan because Seth has to go pick up some drugs deals or something. And then Ethan's like, I got this taken care of, bro. I'm not going to hit on any of the girls in the club. And so once Seth leaves, Ethan just snorts a huge amount of cocaine.
Yeah, like a Ricky Hatton style snort.
Exactly, and you see this in detail in the movie.
Then he goes through the dance floor where there's this absolutely horrible, like, edit effect to make it seem that he's lost.
It's
and drugged up.
It's the cocaine filter they put on the video where he's got, like, just blurry rings around the frame. And it's just to show that he is high.
Yes. And then the wife of Bobby. I'm just going to refer to him as Rob Van Dam.
Yeah,
this
me
whole
too.
Thing. I'm not going to try and confuse our listeners of who Bobby Kalinowski is.
It's more amusing to think about Rob Van Dam,
yes.
The wrestler, in these situations.
RVD's wife goes to the washroom and runs into Ethan in an abandoned hallway. And the guy says, yo, you like to slide the roofs? She does not like to slide the roofs and is attacked by him. And suddenly he takes her into a room.
And he rapes her.
He attempts to rape her. But you're jumping ahead here, Wade, because RVD is sitting at the club table when the neighbor and his wife, the wife comes back from the washroom and says, oh, I don't know where your wife is. She left before me. And instant panic overcomes Rob Van Dam. It's as if some voice goes off in his head stating she's being raped. So he gets up screaming from the dance floor. Then he's in the middle of the dance floor, and whether it be mental telepathy, they're going back to her screaming in this abandoned room, and Rob can hear her screaming. Comes into the room, finds the room, and I swear, Rob Van Dam, in the most polite manner to this guy who is raping his wife, says, "Get up, motherfucker." Pulls him up. The guy pulls out a knife, runs at him. Now, I want you to picture Sean Stasiak when he did that gimmick where he ran into shit and the guy got out of the way. That is exactly what this scene was, where Rob sidesteps, the guy runs into the couch with a switchblade, stabs, and kills himself.
He just ran into a couch and, yes, exactly, stabs himself. And this is the inciting incident of the movie.
This now, is it. This is the heat spot for the entire movie.
Now
this
what?
This moron who was coked up and accidentally stabbed and killed himself. Instantly, mind you. So we dissolve to scenes of testimony from everyone at the police station. And boy, this was some great back and forth between Rob Van Dam and the detective, where the detective is trying to get a confession out of Van Dam.
Yes, this detective, by the way, we already know he is a crooked cop because we see him in the opening scene with Seth when they're about to kill that guy. So this is Rob Van Dam dealing with the crooked cop. And then Seth, okay, well, you go on. Talk about this great witty interaction between the two.
Well, the detective says, "Suppose I said I had a witness that said you did stab him." And Van Dam replies, "Well, I'd tell you you're full of shit." So we cut through this. Van Dam is let off on self-defense. The owner is pissed off when he is informed of this decision by the crooked cop.
Yes, he calls and then he is just hysterical. And
he hangs up the phone in anger and shouts out that, "I'll take care of this myself."
Yeah.
So Van Damme and the neighbor are on their way home, and they're in the car, and they're blocked on the highway, and the car is surrounded. We cut to a scene of them turning the car around and driving away. The two women are in the back seat, the two wives. The wife tries to call 911 but is not getting any service, so we see them race into a parking garage and are going at a ridiculously high speed as they back into a parking spot, and then Van Damme leaves them. And we get the classic stair chase with these gang members that are after Van Damme, who a bounty of $100,000 has been placed on Van Damme by Seth Borders to kill this man or capture him who has killed his brother.
Yes, that's right. They chase throughout the parking lot and eventually Rob Van Dam goes outside of the parking lot and they chase him down some alley where Rob Van Dam starts climbing the wall of the building. He starts climbing the wall. The bad guys this whole time, they have guns. So they're shooting at Rob Van Dam as he's climbing the wall. Eventually, one bullet catches Rob Van Dam in the leg and Rob Van Dam falls down. But at the same time, the cops' sirens arrive and then the bad guys leave, assuming that they had just killed Rob Van Dam. Meanwhile, this was only a shot in the leg. And in an action movie, a shot in the leg means
nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
We go back to the car where Clay, the neighbor, is with the two wives. And he's ready to pack it in for the night. He said, "It's been 10 minutes. And he's ready to leave. And then Van Dam shows up. They have to abandon the car. And this does not make Clay happy because this is his car. The two hitmen come back to Seth Borders and they're upset because he wanted Van Damme alive, and then he's upset when he's told that Van Damme is alive. This man seems very hard to please, and they do this sequence with the two hitmen where they say, "Dead or alive?" as they put a knife to the two hitmen's throats. This was some tremendous interplay between the heels.
Yeah, okay, yes. And then now what's... Where are they? Now they're driving, and then they come across a group of black thugs.
Yes.
Headed by B2K's Omarion.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Omarion from B2K, the boy band.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Anyway. Well, they beat down the gang in the parking lot, and this is when Clay, he had his wallet stolen by these thugs. And he takes back his, quote, cheese and wallet, and he admonishes the thugs, saying, "We have come a long way from slavery to Obama," and does not appreciate the use of the N-word. by this gang.
Okay.
Then we go back to the station,
police station.
Yeah, with the corrupt cop. They give their statement.
And the cop doesn't care, basically. The cop's like, okay, well, we'll deal with it later. We're going to send you home in this cab.
In this lovely cab.
And RVD at this whole time, finally, he reveals to the cop that he's a Navy SEAL and that he doesn't need the cop's help. And then the cop drives them to this gas station where the taxi driver goes to the washroom, leaving the three in the car, the four in the car. And then we see another gang arrive at the gas station to attack Rob Van Dam.
And there's some great standouts in gang number two here, such as Demon, the leader of the group, who is actually the director of this movie, David DeFalco, who is a former professional wrestler. Oh. And his promo skills during the scene illustrate why he is a former professional wrestler. And his muscle is a guy named Animal, who is played by Nelson Frazier, a.k.a. Viscera, who suggests to Van Damme that, quote, "we fuck yo ass up." And that leads to Van Damme picking up the picking up the gas nozzle and squirting gas onto Viscera and then pulling out a lighter and threatening him with the light. Now, Wei, you drive a car, as do I. You cannot simply just pick up a gas nozzle like that and just without even hitting what grade of gas you want.
Without paying.
Prepayment is usually mandatory, especially after hours at a gas station. This guy just picks it up and squirts him with this gas. And I would say, had he have followed through on this very expensive scene, it would have been the most heat Viscera would have ever had in his career. So Van Damme beats the shit out of all these guys. We leave in the cab with RVD sending them off and says he's going to call in an old debt as he limps into a strip club. This is after he's abandoned the family. He sent them all home. He limps into the strip club, and Batista is sitting at a table, angry about a shortage of vodka, with a giant woman's breasts right next to him.
Yes, this woman is actually played by porn star Stormy Daniels, and she just basically has her breasts exposed. And if you are a PG fan of the WWE, maybe this is not the scene.
This was a rude awakening.
Yes.
For Big Dave.
Essentially, this was a conversation at a table between Rob Van Dam and Batista with a porn star's breasts exposed right next to him the whole time. And it's normal for a movie for there to be nudity and all that, but
this was so unnecessary.
Yeah, I guess it's just funny for me to imagine the number of takes they must have had between Rob Van Dam and Batista shooting this with this woman's huge massive breasts staring right at their faces this whole time. It's a little amusing.
RVD had the challenging opening line of, "What's up, BR?" And typically in a movie, when you introduce a character, you want to establish the who, the what, the why. Mm-hmm. Who is this character? And the really experienced writers are able to nail this in a whole one line. Just right to the point. Batista states, "We're not in the Navy anymore, and you're in my place." So pretty straight to the point that Batista and him were in the Navy together, and now he owns a strip club.
Yeah.
BR stands for Big Ron, and he's upset at RVD because he never showed up and invited him over for a family dinner and asks him to get the fuck out of here. So there's clearly a past between these two, and RVD has essentially cut him out of his life. So we then go to a scene with the crooked cop and Borders, and they're teasing dissension here. Borders wants RVD's address, and the cop is worried about his Navy SEAL background, and Borders threatens to expose the cop's second income. So we're seeing a little bit of problems permeating here between the two.
Yeah.
Van Damme leaves BR's place and is walking home through a park. And, Wei, I'm sure you enjoyed this scene because gang number three showed up, led by Ja Rule.
The Ja Rule.
I was not aware Ja Rule was in this
movie. Me neither.
He apparently had a young Jeff Jarrett along with him as well. And this, like, these looked like the most least impressive stand-ins for a movie I've ever seen. Like, there was this one giant kid who looked to be 400 pounds there. Just, it's like 20-year-old wrestling fan that probably had a chance to be in a scene with Rob Van Dam
yeah.
at Ja Rule and jumped at the chance.
So they beat up Rob Van Dam. They all gang up on him. And then it's revealed that Batista was the one behind all this. He himself wanted the bounty, so he set him up using Ja Rule and Ja Rule's buddies. And what follows is perhaps my favorite scene involving any professional wrestler in a movie of all time. No joke. This made the whole viewing experience worthwhile.
Van Damme states during this scene that he took a bullet for BR and calls him a piece of shit and then yells, "What happened to No Man Left Behind?" And I noted this was like a theatrical version of when Evolution turned on Randy Orton in 2004 with the thumbs down.
Oh, yes, yes.
Batista, midway through this scene, changes his mind and tells the gang to stop and is called a big goofy motherfucker by Ja Rule. This was so good. Batista then shoots him in the head. And Batista, this was my favorite part of the movie, this dialogue. "You tell me to go fuck myself? I thought we were friends." "What's that? You're sorry? Apology not fucking accepted, motherfucker."
This was great.
It was just so great because this was Batista delivering this.
This was Batista shooting Ja Rule in the head.
With an automatic. Like, he had this gigantic gun, apparently in his pants.
Right in the head. I didn't expect it whatsoever. And it was crazy.
Shot Ja Rule right in the head.
Yeah.
"Apology not fucking accepted, motherfucker."
Yeah.
We go to a scene where Clay is in bed with his wife, and he's battling this conscience of leaving Bobby as he lies safe in his bed. Then RVD's in another park, and apparently Tara drove up in a motorcycle with a helmet on and shoots him in the chest. Van Damme no-sells the gunshot from 5 feet away and drives off on the bike, meets Clay outside in his yard. Then Van Damme goes into his house.
That was completely pointless, by the way.
This was to establish him getting shot, and he no-sells the gunshot.
This was him getting shot and also acquiring a motorcycle that he would later use in the movie.
So he's stolen Clay's car, a cab, and now a motorcycle.
And this motorcycle bandit's guy who shot him in the chest.
The director clearly watched Rambo before this next scene, where he goes into the bathroom, where he's staring into the mirror, where he looks at his bullet wound that has gone into his shoulder. And I swear to God, I thought we were going to get the Stallone scene where he puts gunpowder on the two sides of the wound and just has flames go through to shut the cut. But we weren't ready for that kind of budget in this movie. Instead, he uses scissors to take the bullet out. And then he shoots himself up with what I can only believe are some form of steroids with a needle to his ass.
Okay. It could be a steroid. Could be some sort of magical Navy SEAL healing serum.
It could be.
Yeah.
He then climbs into bed. And I thought he had come into his daughter's room to go to the bathroom, but apparently it was his wife's room because he pulls the covers down and the wife is duct taped and screaming, which we did not hear when he walked in two minutes ago.
Yeah, I didn't really understand this. I guess she must have fallen asleep while she was bandaged and beaten.
She informs him that Brianna has been kidnapped, and this leads to a scene right out of Power Rangers where Rob Van Dam morphs into Navy SEAL Bobby.
Yeah.
Where he gets all into black and puts on his shades.
His sunglasses are the final bit. You have to put your sunglasses on.
He is officially transformed into a man he had put into his past.
At night, you have to put your sunglasses on.
Oh. We go to the scene where Brianna has been kidnapped. She calls the kidnappers meatheads and that her dad is going to kick their ass. The dude states that he's not a meathead. He went to community college, but he didn't graduate. The other guy, I thought, man, this guy looks familiar. I'm like, is it because he looks like the Big Show? No. His name is Steve Schwartz, and he was at the Cauliflower Alley Club this past year and was filming something there.
Really?
So I met this guy briefly.
Oh, wow.
At Cauliflower Alley Club this past year, and here he was as one of the hitmen in Wrong Side of Town.
Hmm.
Borders arrives in a Hummer limousine. The girl is taken off to pee. Big Show gets his ass kicked right in the balls by the girl and says that her dad taught her that. Then we get the crooked cop babyface turn as he shows up to oppose Shields, who defends his actions for murder by saying the universe has to balance itself out because, you see, his brother had died, so therefore someone else has to die to balance the universe out.
Yeah. And he reveals later that Ethan wasn't just his brother, it was his son.
Yes, this was right up there with Darth Vader revealing this to Luke Skywalker. Van Damme shows up and starts picking guys off with a sniper rifle. And then Seth gives the whole backstory about how he was upstairs with a girl and got her pregnant, and that's how he ended up having this son, Ethan. So they kill the cop. Then Van Damme walks in and says they're holding a gun to the daughter, Brianna. And Van Damme is perfectly fine with the boss shooting his daughter.
He's so calm. He's so calm that they won't pull the trigger.
But he says, if you do that, then I'm going to shoot you. So Van Damme is putting up the ultimatum of his daughter versus the boss here. Shields calls off the bounty, but an intense metal tune then ensues. And that tells me this movie is not over yet. And an attack ensues with Big Ron coming to the save. And we get a fight scene between Big Ron and this guy who looked like Billy Blanks, which leads to this unarmed fight scene where the music playing is something you would hear as a WWF pay-per-view theme. Batista gets top position on Billy Blanks with strong ground and pound, but then Billy Blanks pulls out a knife and tries to stab Batista. Batista comes back and gets his own weapon, which is a screwdriver. So
they stab each other, they cut each other, and then eventually the Billy Blanks gets the better of Batista. And then all the while, Van Damme is going to save Brianna again. And then Van Damme manages to kill Borders.
Batista uses a pipe at the end for the save, and then the movie finishes off with Big Ron, Brianna, and Bobby going off into the sunset with comedy, talking about the amount of times BR has saved RVD's life in comparison to how many times RVD has saved Big Ron's life. So it's a happy ending. Two ex-Navy SEALs are reunited as friends, and Brianna now has an uncle named Ron.
Mm-hmm. Big Ron. Yeah. That was the
I'll say there were some entertaining parts of this movie.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I will definitely say it's a worthwhile viewing for any wrestling fan, especially if you're a fan of Rob Van Dam or David Batista.
I really enjoy in roles like this. I would, in fact, if he came out with another action movie, I would totally go see it.
Would you?
He, to me, is just like the perfect guy for these kind of roles.
Yes, I don't know if I'd go necessarily to
watch a whole Batista movie,
but I mean, I thought he stole the show here, to be honest. He's definitely a better actor than Rob Van Damme. I mean, I'm sorry, but Rob Van Damme, not really. I don't think
this movie was a vehicle to build him for anything.
No,
larger.
No. That said, though, it is pretty dishonest to advertise David Batista.
I watched this movie, and 40 minutes in, I'm like, where is Batista? He is the main star of this movie, I was under the assumption.
No. No, but this is definitely a Rob Van Dam movie, but some awful dialogue, just a very tired premise. But you know what? You go into an action movie not expecting Shakespeare, not expecting whatever. So if you turn your brain off for this, this is great. And that Ja Rule scene, tremendous.
It was really great. I give this a 4.5 out of 10.
I give it about a 6.
All right. We're going to fire off now into the feedback because we have tons this week. We got huge amounts of feedback for the Tasteless Angles. First off, we're going to go through the regular feedback. Then we'll get into the contest ideas because I feel this is going to take up a significant portion of the Review Away podcast this week. So let's get right into it, Way. Start off with Jay Hunter. Hang on a minute. During last week's Law with the WoW review, John mentioned that Way bought him a car. Was this a mystery angle? Do you know that what Booker T did last summer, which was a WWE storyline in roughly 2004 that lasted a few weeks and was dropped? I don't remember this at all.
Me neither. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Dale Perry, Let's Roll was popular post 9/11 in America. It was reported that those were the final words before the passengers attacked the hijackers of Flight 93. What's he talking about?
Remember when Undertaker said, "Let's roll, bro," to Kane?
Okay. All right. It was through this effort by the passengers that Flight 93, which was bound for the White House, ended up crashing in Pennsylvania. Undertaker saying, "Let's roll, bro," was probably a nod to that, not to his biker persona. Okay, really?
I think we're really analyzing here off-the-cuff remark made by Undertaker. I mean, "Let's roll" is not like some...
I did not take it like that at all,
and I've never heard that associated. I'm sure that is what was said on Flight 93, but I don't know. I just thought it was
the final words before the passengers attacked the hijackers. So they, okay,
yeah. Well, if you've seen the movie United 93, it's where the plane is taken hostage, and the passengers, before it hits the White House, they all group together and try to stop the plane, and it ends up the plane goes down somewhere in Pennsylvania rather than hitting the White House.
Okay.
So it's actually a very good movie.
Could be true.
Tom Mahegan, John and Wei, great volume on the podcast. Thanks for sounding like you are talking into the mic instead of sounding like you are far away from the mic. Thank you.
Robert Otto, just a few things about Raw. One, I'm sick of Cole. He can't keep heel, and he can't keep face several times during the Daniel Bryan segment. He jumped back and forth to some degree. Two, the Miz Daniel segment is tough, in my opinion, because both stars are up and coming, and either person losing may derail their momentum. Three, do you have any response?
I was just going to say, I don't think Daniel has... that much momentum. Let's be realistic.
I think he's definitely moving up. He's got momentum, but Miz definitely stronger.
There's a certain level that Daniel Bryan's going to get to, and a certain level that they will allow him to get to. So we'll see what they do at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, we'll see. Three, I'd love to see Cena in the Nexus. Have him hate it at first, but have segments of each member preaching the Nexus to him and slowly turn him heel. I don't know about that.
I don't think there's any legs left in Nexus. The group has no heat, and I think Nexus is done.
Yeah, and like for a Cena heel turn, I don't think it would be with this angle. Number four, Cena talking crap to Otunga about his wife was great. Thanks for fixing the audio much, much better. Gotta love level later. Okay. Well, learn to use periods, everybody.
Gotta love grammar. Mark Cardoso, I was at the SmackDown before Unforgiven. I actually appeared on camera during the promo for Taker Beatdown from Chronic. Funny story is when me and my friends went to that show, my one friend wanted to see Chronic but missed their debut when he went for a washroom break, which is typical for a Chronic match. He was so disappointed. As for my choice of bad tasteless angle, I had to go with 3-minute warnings attack on the HLA segment. It was bad enough that they wasted a segment to humiliate Eric Bischoff, but when 3-minute warning made the run, they legitimately injured the women. TSN at the time edited out the attack, but on the 10th anniversary show, they showed it. I was disgusted and applaud the WWE's decision for not having male wrestlers attack the women anymore.
Okay, Matt or James. More on Riott's elbow drop and flourish moves. For a shooting star press, I think the idea is to add flash and to gain a slight bit of distance from the target. It really depends on who's doing the move. Mark Merrow and Billy Kidman did the move quite differently. Regardless, for a splash, the intention is to land on the person and push the wind out of them. An elbow drop isn't as large of a falling object, and I presume is used as a precision attack. Yes, part of this was written in jest.
Jeff Johnson. I finally got around to watching Raw Roulette. I can clearly hear the wheel pick up speed after it's slowing down. It's like cruise control on a car. It picks up speed to a certain point where it knows what it will land on.
Josh Thomas. My favorite VMAs was 96. The Pumpkins won 7 awards. Woo woo woo.
Colin Oral. Hey guys, the audio was much, much better. For the first time, I didn't have to turn up the sound all the way to hear the show. I agree with the other guy too, who would get his eardrums blown out when the Jersey Shore theme came on, which then puts that theme in my head all day Wednesday at work.
Shy Avigan, I watched Wrong Side of Town in March since my girlfriend finds Batista hot, and I thought it would be cool to spend an evening on this. Rob Zatkowski as Bobby Kalinowski. What the fuck? Couldn't they have come up with something more original? As with most wrestlers, it was hard to find RVD believable and separate him from his in-ring character. I swear I waited for, yeah, dude, whatever, coming. He's better on the stick when not given lines. What made little sense to me was for him to be a parent for a teenager. No tattoos. We're not gonna talk about it. The plot itself was very simple and something the average person can understand. Too many obvious cliches. Bald boss, dumb bearded bikers as his henchmen, and a crooked cop working for him. Although they were fake, I found the Batista companion set a better pair than Ronnie and Bobby.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, okay. The boobs.
Oh, okay.
Girl and girl. At least it kept Dave in his natural environment. What could be awesome is on the big Ronnie supposedly turn on Bobby scene, for Bobby's line to be, "You're supposed to be my friend."
That would have been great.
After the DVD release, RVD got vocal on how pissed he was on Lionsgate of taking him off top billing in favor of Batista, as he was told he's the star of the movie. And this is a quote from Rob Van Dam. "I thought it was my movie. The movie was written for me. I was there for 3 weeks, filmed every day except for one day. They came out with a DVD box cover and, oh my God, I didn't realize Batista is the star of it. I was completely confused. They said this was like a vehicle for me to go into these other action movies, and yeah, Batista is the star. He was like there for 2 days. I feel like Lionsgate pulled the carpet out from underneath my feet when I was looking. Hopefully when you watch it, I'm still starring in it."
So there we go. Batista getting top billing in this movie and causing some problems. David Cicero, last week you guys kind of dismissed the idea of Stephanie McMahon being the mystery GM due to the fact that she just had another child. However, this may make sense because by making the GM anonymous for the past few months, it would allow her time to get back into shape and get ready to get back on television. This would also make sense due to her past history with Jericho, and they could play off her as the McMahon who still has hard feelings against Bret Hart. In terms of the most tasteless angle, I would have to put my vote in for the Billy and Chuck angle, which culminated in the wedding on SmackDown. This was a cheap way for them to get publicity, and even had the balls to say it on that episode itself.
Mohammed Al-Zubaydi. "I just rented Wrong Side of Town. The trailer looked fucking awful. I'm definitely more excited about the review than watching the actual movie. I can't believe Ja Rule has resorted to co-starring in this crap. My, how mediocre have fallen."
Thulani Mabuza Nakub. "Wrong Side of Town poster featured Dave Batista, yet he only has a minor supporting role. Apparently his performance was the best, and you know a movie's gonna suck when they intentionally mislead movie views by putting Batista, knowing he's far from being the main character on the cover, so that WWE fans would get suckered in. This movie was absolute crap."
Jay Hunter, "A small note, but mentioning that you have Cole's laptop IP number means nothing. You need the IP number of the GM's BlackBerry or however he's communicating with Cole. And even that, you'd need to obtain the person's name from their internet service provider, which you won't get unless you have a court order. So, basically, you have nothing. You'd also have nothing if the GM used an IP blocker / hider. Did you know that Wrong Side of Town is also a porno movie? I got a shock seeing its screenshots when I Googled the name a few months back. I've tried sitting through Wrong Side of Town about 4 times now, and even with fast-forwarding, I can only make it to about 30 minutes in, where 2 Tank Abbotts get threatened with a knife. This film looks like Rob himself just walked into a shot as they were filming, and they decided to follow him around instead. It's just RVD with his mid-90s ponytail and a casual t-shirt and jeans. I can't watch it, but it'll be great hearing your review. Enjoy your slow death, gentlemen."
All right, so thanks there for your feedback, and there were a few in there who also mentioned their tasteless angle. So we'll now officially get into our contest here, Wei, where we asked you, you know, the storylines and angles that have been presented over the years that whether you found incredibly tasteless, just done in bad, you know, bad sentiments behind a storyline being created that has somewhat changed your view of pro wrestling. You may still watch it, but you have different standards for wrestling after seeing something like that presented to you. So I think as we go through this way, if there's any that really stand out for you, just mark them down or something.
Sure.
And then at the end, we'll kind of go over the finalists and give out a prize or two to whoever. Not only bringing up a storyline, but giving us some valid points as well. We couldn't get to everybody's
comments here because we had to weed out some that might have been redundant or just had to do some editing.
Yeah.
The feedback was immense.
And with that, I always went with the people who posted the angle first. So whoever posted first.
Yeah, absolutely. And
to keep their choice.
For those of you that posted multiple times, it was only your first one that was that I took. So let's get right into it, Way. Michael Johnson starts us off. There are several angles that made me change the station because of the stupidity and utter lack of taste portrayed. The one I will submit for the contest is this angle, and I will share my others later. I feel that the Eddie Guerrero storyline with Rey Mysterio was really disgusting when a man had just passed away and he is being mocked and insulted in front of his friend. Telling the world Eddie's in hell, mocking Eddie's entrance, talking trash about him, saying he was no saint and that he was going to read from Eddie's autobiography to prove it, and a bunch of other skits and mockery just to do a wrestling match at No Way Out. That one definitely for me is probably right at the top in terms of, I've always believed that there are certain, you know, certain levels of tastelessness that the WWE or any company will produce. I never thought they would use a guy's death for an angle. And I think what made it worse was that it seemed, despite the huge amount of backlash from those in the company, from those that were watching, it was like this stubborn nature of them to continue going forward with it and throwing out stuff like, Eddie would have wanted this. Fuck off.
Ridiculous.
Eddie Guerrero is the same guy who turned down an angle involving Art Barr after he died. So don't say that Eddie Guerrero would have wanted this, because I think it would be the complete opposite. I absolutely hated that entire period of wrestling. Anyway.
Good choice.
Good choice to start us off with.
Barry Alexander Martin. So many offensive angles. Think I'll go with Brian Pillman wetting Marlena's services from Goldust for a month. While that stipulation is fairly normal, the weeks of Pillman Triple X files that followed weren't. The implication here was that Brian had spent the month essentially raping Marlena, and that was okay. Brian died before the story went any further, but still absolutely deplorable.
That was definitely implied in that angle. Though it looks like it was going to end up with Marlena leaving Goldust for Pillman.
So, okay. So she was raped so much that she enjoyed it.
Well, no, she was... they were playing Goldust here.
Oh,
maybe that was the implication there. But there you go.
So that's not offensive at all.
No. I'm not saying that at all. James Rattenbury... Most offensive angle has to be Fritz Von Erich faking a heart attack. Even though I wasn't alive, and I've seen this on numerous occasions on DVDs and YouTube, at this point in time, world-class championship wrestling was on its downfall, and David and Mike had both passed away, so they decided to renew the Freebirds with Iceman King Parsons in place of Michael Hayes to try and relive the success of the Freebirds Von Erich feud. Long story short, during a cage match, there's a run-in between the new Freebirds and Kerry Von Erich. Fritz comes into the cage for the save, isn't the idea of a cage match no one can get in, and collapses, faking a heart attack. In the hope that the press would be all over it with the Von Erich tragedy striking again and bring the fans back. So not only did Fritz fake a heart attack, and which is pretty tasteless, he also tried to cash in on the deaths of his children, which is why it's wrestling's most offensive angle. This one, absolutely. They had done the tribute shows for both David and Mike Von Erich, and they were essentially using all of this as heat for this angle with Fritz suffering a heart attack. So that one will be on my short list, I think, at the end.
Patrick McHugh, my pick for the most offensive angle is TNA's dealings with Adam Pac-Man Jones in 2007. I'm not going to explain the whole thing, but basically he was suspended by the NFL after being in an incident at a strip club where he threw $80,000+ around and then demanded it back. After he was thrown out, someone came back with a gun to get the money and started shooting. A few people were shot, including someone who was a former professional wrestler called Tommy Urbanski, who was left paralyzed. So what do TNA do? Of course they bring this guy in, pay him a shitload of money, more than just about anybody on the roster who are killing themselves every week, and give him the tag title. Bad enough, but they decide to put him in matches where no physical contact was allowed, and the level of stupidity just went off the charts.
Yes.
Okay, well, and then he goes on to say where this took place. This was at Bound for Glory, TNA's supposed WrestleMania. He gets on the apron and eventually makes it rain, just like he did in the club. Mike Tenay then comes out with the line that, when you know the story, is just one of the most offensive things that I've heard in a while. Earl Hebner starts gathering the money, and Tenay says, picking up the bucks like a dancer in the club. How funny. People get shot and someone is left paralyzed, and TNA decides this is an appropriate time to do a bit of comedy.
That was a real bad one. This is a horrible industry way. Mm. Charles Edward Cooks II. As a black guy, I always took the characters portrayed by black wrestlers with a grain of salt, saying at least they got one of us on TV. My father walked in on me watching Booker T wrestling someone, and my father said, oh my God, I can't believe in this day and age a black guy would get on TV and shuck and jive and bug his eyes out like that. He looked at me with such shame and said, son, I was a Black Panther as a young man, attended civil rights marches and protests. I can't allow you to watch this in my house. Now, up until this point, I never really thought about it. I was just a wrestling fan and didn't take any of it seriously past entertainment. But after that day, I couldn't look at Booker T without thinking about the old blaxploitation films of the 60s. He did do a lot of eye-bugging and classic Sambo type of behavior. But hey, I guess coming up at a time, he did what one had to do to get over in the South.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know.
Stereotypes, unfortunately, have just become such a...
They're the norm.
A stalemate. Just part of wrestling. Whether for good or bad, I mean, that's, you know, you could outline pretty much any race, any culture, and it's somewhat been dumbed down to, you know.
Maybe it's just a symptom of being exposed to so much of it, but I don't even see Booker T as any type of stereotypical character to me.
They booked him really... Do you remember that one angle? It was way back when he first came into the WWF, and they did an angle where he broke into a car and hijacked it, and he uses the line, just like riding a bike, as he stole this car.
Hmm.
I just mean, that was, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, there's definitely been worse. I mean, you have sure. Angles. You got Crime Time, which is just completely based on stealing.
Sure. Yeah.
Forrest Bowling, my pick for the worst angle in professional wrestling would have to be the continuing of Over the Edge. Sure, it wasn't an angle, but my moral compass was destroyed when a man died and they just kept going. And Taker, a dark, grim reaper-like character, winning the belt. I didn't even think of that. Just put the awful cherry on the top.
Yeah, that one, not to mention on that same show, it was like three segments after the match, they did a backstage vignette where they show an ambulance, and it was to put Vince McMahon on the ambulance from being attacked earlier in the night. And it
was, I had no idea.
Like, wow, how could you include this pre-tape?
Sam Kennerly.
The most tasteless angle ever done in wrestling was undoubtedly the night after Brian Pillman's death, where Vince McMahon interviewed his wife live on the air. I've looked everywhere for the video, but the only thing I can find is the 10-bell salute for Pillman. I know that the Eddie promos from Randy after his death were terrible, but pulling a widow on screen as a ratings ploy is absolutely disgusting and sickening. Yes, it was a touching tribute from Melanie when she said she wanted him to be remembered as a great father and the best husband, but I highly doubt doing this on air soon after the death was done with her best intentions. I didn't even have as much a problem with her being on the show as the way it was just milked until the last segment. It was every time they went to break, coming up, and it was just, that was just absolutely pathetic.
Max Moon, Jim Ross's tribute from Jim Ross's colon surgery was certainly a low point in my life as a wrestling fan. I'm glad my mom didn't walk into the room while I was watching this, because I'm sure she'd have lost respect for me.
Alex Siegel. For me, one of the lowest segments in wrestling was when they had Kane dig up the remains of Undertaker's dead parents, steal the coffins, and place them at ringside. Then when Taker returned to confront Kane about it, Kane chokeslammed Taker through the coffins, exposing the skeletons inside. I do not remember this angle.
Me neither.
It might not have aired in Canada, for all we know.
Okay. Andrew McMahon. Considering how terrible wrestling can be, my answer could change as soon as I post this, but the most offensive thing I've seen in wrestling was during an XPW show. I guess that's not too surprising. They had Pogo the Clown holding hands with a kid and playing with him in a park. By the end of the video, Pogo was alone and covering a grave with a shovel. The character was, of course, inspired by John Wayne Gacy, who killed 33 young boys and performed at birthday parties as Pogo the Clown.
That's fucking terrible.
It's funny.
XPW, dude, has had some crazy shit. I think they once promoted a show where they were going to, like, electrocute a dog in the ring or something like that. They were just a horrible promotion.
Were they actually going to electrocute a dog?
I don't think it ended up happening, but there was some tease of it. I never followed XPW. They never were my cup of tea for what I enjoy in professional wrestling. Jordan Welsh, HBK and God versus the McMahons. I mean, fuck McMahon. You had to go to religion to make a storyline, then a basic don't cross me storyline, which would not have gone too far. I hated WWE in 2006. I don't know if it's because I grew up as like in like Catholic school for like 15 years, but I've never been offended by anything religious in pro wrestling. Like when the whole thing about Austin being put on that symbol, which was to be a cross.
Yeah.
I've never been offended when it comes to religion. I thought it was a stupid storyline. Like it added, it was really just stupid to do, but I wasn't offended by it.
I could definitely see it being offensive.
Sure. There are definitely people who would, but there was that scene. Remember where Vince did the vignette inside the church where he was like, he drank the holy water and then spit it out like Triple H.
Oh. Excellent. Matt Cruz. This is making me sad.
We got a lot more to go through, Way.
I'm not sure if this counts for the contest, but I think the most tasteless angle that ever happened was on the McMahon DVD. Stephanie said that while she was pregnant, Vince wanted to do an angle where it would be revealed that he was the father of his own grandchild.
Yes. He did admit to that, but that did not technically happen. So, Kyle Williams, the treatment of the women by Vince is quite tasteless. Maybe the most memorable was having Trish bark for him, but others include making out with several divas, Tori Wilson, Candice Michelle, beating down his own daughter, sedating his own wife for several weeks, and even firing one, I think it was Ashley Massaro, for spilling coffee on him. Granted, Vince always got his in the end, but there's no real entertainment value in seeing these poor women degraded at the hands of their overtly horny boss. Those don't make the cut for me.
Yeah, there's definitely been worse, although those... Absolutely.
The dog barking was really, really bad. But it's like Trish herself calls that one of the highlights of her career. And that's after she's left the company where she doesn't really have to.
Yeah, it still doesn't make it.
Oh, I'm not by any means endorsing that segment. That was terrible.
Yeah.
But
you know, like I'm just talking about in context of all these terrible angles. I see what you mean. Doesn't make the cut. Nobody's dying in any of those.
Oh, God. The standard is so low that degrading women is just not bad enough.
It's normal. Chris Angler, this may not qualify for the contest, but what I find the most offensive about WWE is their unapologetic sense of entitlement to presenting revisionist history. Artistic license is one thing, but the presentations of certain information by WWE are out-and-out lies. Claims like the Ultimate Warrior tanking ratings during his WCW debut, doing so-called historical documentaries of ECW and AWA, but only mentioning those currently in WWE's good books, making a WWE Presents website claiming that they would... website claiming that they would never present angles involving guns, rape, or vandalism when all three had been on television within the past 2 years, and having the audacity to hold annual ceremonies for a Hall of Fame for which there is neither a hall nor a legitimate balloting process is an affront to fans. Truth is absolute and inescapable. To act this way is to tarnish one's own legacy.
I understand Chris's point, but at the end of the day, the WWE is a promotion, and they get to kind of write their story. So
yeah.
I'm not going to necessarily knock them. They're not, you know, I guess the best way to put it is I think they're much closer to, like, they're further away from, like, a legitimate sport, like the NFL, where...
They're not a legitimate sport at all.
Exactly. So... You know, I'll disagree with them when they'll throw stuff out, but the onus isn't on them to be honest on their television. They can write it off as we're entertainment and we're going to tell our story how we want. So, Robert Otto, I think the most tasteless angle was Chris Jericho in China when Jericho tied China to a chair and then smashed her hand with a hammer. Jesus Christ, when did that happen? It was during an Eddie Jericho feud when Eddie and China were an item.
I think it's funny. I don't think it's offensive.
I mean, it's...
Smashed your hand with a hammer, so what?
If the story is that this heel is attacking this woman, and he's eventually going to... The babyface is going to go over. I mean, that's...
Wait, are we complaining here because China is a woman?
Well, he's beating a woman with an object.
She's a wrestler. They've had matches together.
But
she's
this is not a match. This is tying a woman to a chair.
Yeah, but she's a competitor.
Beating her with a hammer.
Yeah, but she's a competitor. If you can attack a woman
inside the ring. Wait a minute. That's like me saying if I took some UFC fighter hostage and shot him in the head.
You're not shooting him in the head. This is him...
You're using an inanimate object. That has nothing to do with a competition.
Smashing her hand with a hammer. What's so bad about that?
Well, they're tied to a chair.
So what? How else would you smash someone with a hammer? Well, okay, let's see. Let's say he was doing this to Eddie Guerrero. Would that have been bad? Tying Eddie Guerrero to a chair and smashing his hand with a hammer.
I think the violence against women theme really jumps out.
Oh, come on. I definitely don't count that at all.
Okay.
Anyway, Shy Avigan. Thanks, I love you guys as well. Props to John on the cool idea for the contest. Deep one. For me personally, the most tasteless angle ever would be the Muhammad Hassan terrorist attack on The Undertaker. This angle would only air hours after the 7th of July 2005 London bombings, which had 56 human beings killed and over 700 injured. The episode was taped, but with the event occurring only hours earlier, without sufficient time to properly edit the show, the segment would air across the US and Canada, edited in Europe and Australia, and would catch the national television, national attention, which would lead UPN to monitor the storyline and later pressure WWE to keep Hassan off of their network almost immediately, although the plans for him were to face Batista for the title at SummerSlam and win it. He lost to Taker on the next pay-per-view and would never be seen again. As an Israeli citizen whose country has been affected by terror by numerous terrorist organizations on countless times, with thousands injured and dead, and with 9/11 still being fresh in our memories, I found it hard to watch because I could not justify the decision by the WWE to use men dressed as terrorists in a storyline. Pushing a character over is fine, but not at any cost. I could also identify with any British family members or friends of the passing or injured people trying to digest and then watching or even hearing on the media about this tasteless storyline taking place and being aired. You could count a dozen tasteless angles in wrestling, from the use of Eddie Guerrero or Melanie Pillman in angles, to exploiting Jake Roberts or Scott Hall's alcoholism or Mickey James' weight on TV, which would hurt the performer's family and friends personally, and the wrestling fan at best. This angle would hit an all-time low in my opinion, by reaching people who've been affected by terror, past or present, without even having to be a wrestling fan, and with the coincidence of the events occurring, WWE deserved how it backfired on them.
Yeah, that was a pretty bad one, considering the timing, and they had more than enough time that if they had chosen to, they could have changed around their broadcast. It did not air till Thursday, and those attacks happened on, I believe, the Wednesday. You had a full, 36 hours where this was one segment that you could have simply changed around for the sake of a worldwide story here about a terrorist attack. Brad Carpenter, the most tasteless angle to me hasn't happened yet, but it's probably anything to do with the promotion of this piece of shit. All right. Actually, it was the King making fun of Molly Holly's weight for a couple of weeks on Raw before she left the company. It was just uncalled for. Yeah, there was a while there. Her gimmick was she had a big ass.
Mm-hmm. And we got one from Muhammad Al-Zubaydi. And this is similar to Shai's angle, but slightly different. As a person of Middle Eastern descent, the most offensive angle to me personally was the Muhammad Hassan character. The way he was portrayed as an American-hating terrorist, and the way he was despised by the WWE wrestlers and the commentary team. I think the last thing we needed in this decade of racial discrimination towards Arabs and Muslims was a Muslim character that catered to the terrorist stereotypes that, and fueled the anger and resentment of American wrestling fans at the time. This is all but a small sample of how hated the Muhammad Hassan character was. Just listen to the commentary by JR and Taz. This week's contest is making me reflect on why I still choose to watch wrestling as a 27-year-old man. Yet I still continue to watch, not proudly, though.
Jermone Jackson, I think of all the angles that I've seen in wrestling, the most offensive to me was the Booker T. Triple H program leading into WrestleMania 19. I'm used to seeing stereotypes in wrestling, but I never in my life thought I'd see one of the WWE's top draws portrayed as a straight-up racist. It seemed pointless because Triple H was already over as a heel and didn't need the extra heat. The whole angle made Booker T. look absolutely foolish. At the very least, they could have booked Booker T. to win the match at WrestleMania. This angle did nothing but make me feel ashamed for Booker T. There were much better ways of building up a wrestling match. Potentially alienating an entire race isn't one of them.
Jack Pisco. The angle that made me want to stop watching wrestling was the angle Booker T feud. They turned Kurt into a stalker who went after Charmel. There were many promos for this, but the worst was for Judgment Day 2005. Kurt broke into Booker's dressing room and attacked Charmel again. The only reason he stopped his assault was because his music started playing. I know this was a storyline, but it was really disturbing and went too far.
Robert McNulty. When the Muhammad Hassan character, can't remember his name, first joined TNA and his entrance music was the sound of a plane crashing. Oh, Jesus. This was a Sheikh Abdul Bashir. Now they only use it once or twice, but Jesus fucking Christ, Vince Russo at his finest. How someone involved in production with TNA caught that was tasteless is beyond me. I think they were perfectly aware of what they were doing. By the way, guys, happy belated one-year anniversary. The podcast makes the walk to college fly. Oh, yeah, I have to say, John, Way totally burned you about the WWF tag titles at Unforgiven 2001. LOL.
All right. Next, we got Josh Thomas. Maybe not tasteless, but it was weird how HBK started doing the crossface after the Benoit incident. I believe it was the fall of that year when he couldn't do his finishing move.
Yeah, I thought that was such a dumb idea for them to make. Like, to me, it was like any flow you had in a match, the heat was just stopped for me when you put that in. Because it's like you're throwing in this move that people have an emotional response to because of what it represents.
It's definitely why he chose a move, because it was a move that was over as a devastating move. But, yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
Awful,
I think it
awful,
took on
awful.
A completely different connotation on top of the fact that that move was specifically used in the murders.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I didn't know what the point of that was.
It's because HBK doesn't know any other submission holds. That's why.
Matt or James, how about when Taz said to Jim Ross, "I'd slap you in the face, but it looks like God already did."
Ooh, that's pretty...
Yeah, no one's brought up as well the Oklahoma character in WCW. Similar sentiment there.
That's right. Mike Still, most tasteless moment for me wouldn't be an actual angle. Sure, the Raw writers will come up with anything to get a reaction, but the most tasteless moment in WWE history has got to be when Confidential played Lex Luger's 911 call from the night Elizabeth died. What's the point of that?
That was probably, like, in terms of just defaming a person's name. Mm-hmm. Like, if you watch that Confidential piece, you would have tuned out thinking that Lex Luger murdered this woman.
Mm.
That was horrible. Terry Small, for the Review Away contest, the moment that made me stop watching wrestling was the Raw after Chris Benoit killed his family and Raw held a tribute show. Someone there had to have known this wasn't an accident, right?
Someone might have, but I don't fault them for that. I mean, even the two of us on that very night when we found out about it, we were working on an obituary piece for Chris Benoit, and it wasn't until midnight of that night that we realized we heard these reports stating that maybe this guy did it. And then it was at that point that we changed that piece into a more of a
news
piece.
Yeah, like we had a whole obit
on
like Chris Benoit assuming it was a suicide or something, and I know that certain people in the company...
No, assuming it was a homicide.
A homicide or a suicide. And I know that certain people in the company were aware that this was not just, you know, some homicide. But, you know, in that situation, like...
Nobody knew for sure. Even, like, I mean, it's... Nobody could tell. Never mind. Tough.
Well, I'm just saying... If you were in the situation where a coworker of yours that you, like, you're not thinking with a full deck, I think there's a lot of emotion that you throw into these, and I, it's a similar thing to when Owen Hart died. Like, hindsight's great that you would have stopped the show, but they didn't. And, you know, it's hard to fault them for the Owen one. The Benoit thing, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that one. And anyway, we don't have enough time to really get into all the details about that. Let's keep going here. Who is next here? Is it... it's yours, Joe.
Okay. Yes, Joe Bray. One of the most tasteless angles, in my opinion, seems to be a forgotten one, and that is the Tim White suicide at his bar on Armageddon 2005. This was after he injured his shoulder during a Hell in a Cell match between Triple H and Jericho in 2002. The local police received a flood of phone calls, and the bar received emails of condolences. After White was found to be alive, the angle continued with White trying to kill himself with rat poison, hanging, suffocation with a pillow, and slicing his wrists. The angle that was then ended a few months later when White decided that he wanted to be alive.
Yeah, this one, when they first did it, it was implied that he killed himself on pay-per-view. And this was, I don't know, the time it turned into like these comedy vignettes, which I think in hindsight no one really cares that much about. But this was also like I think their second pay-per-view after Eddie had died, and it's like you're doing a death angle. It was just horrible timing. This was a very strange period in WWE history. Chris in L.A., when Vince McMahon appeared on the Donnie Deutsch show in the wake of the London Transit bombings, WWE, a day or two before it happened, shot an angle for SmackDown where guys dressed in Arabian garb carried The Undertaker away from the ring after a beatdown by Muhammad Hassan. Then, in typical tasteless WWE fashion, they aired the angle on Thursday. Well, when Donnie Deutsch asked McMahon about the angle and why it was stopped, instead of McMahon just admitting that the angle was shot before the bombings and aired a couple of days later and that it was an error in judgment, he actually blames Hassan for the whole thing, and Donnie Deutsch, being the idiot tool that he is, did not take McMahon to task for all his asinine statements. This incident showed me that McMahon cares more about protecting his own ass than he does about protecting his employees, even when they are following his marching orders. Never had I seen a more blatant example of this.
So it was his employee that hired all these.
He went into business for himself and hired these Arabs.
Yes.
To attack him with piano wire.
Carry the Undertaker. Okay. Eric Creamer. I have a story for the contest about a moment that nearly crippled my wrestling fandom forever. I had a girl over for the evening, and as the night progressed, she started doing her thing. In the middle of it all, my cell phone rings. And by rings, I mean it starts blaring the entrance music for Stone Cold Steve Austin. This immediately causes her to stop and switches it into an argument over how I can support a known wife beater. At least I always have a story about how Austin cock-blocked me. You deserve everything that you get for having Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme music as your ringtone with a girl over.
Yeah, that's a horrible, horrible judgment.
Never mind the wife beating. Jesus.
Daniel Stack, hey guys, I had to double check to make sure this tasteless Attitude Era incident actually happened, but it did indeed, confirmed by Wikipedia. I didn't dream this. The angle happened back in April of 98 during the way too long Kane-Undertaker feud, who are feuding again, by the way. Anyhow, there was a Raw show where Paul Bearer actually had Kane dig up the bodies of the Undertaker's parents from their graves. I guess they had the same mother, at least, Kane and Taker, that is. So Kane brought the caskets into the arena and set one on fire, and then the Undertaker ran at him, and Kane then chokeslammed Taker onto the other casket, smashing it open and actually revealing human bones, fake or not, yeah. Undertaker.
That's funny.
I never will forget how disgusting and tasteless this angle was, and now I know that so many years later it stinks of pre-born-again Russo. Terrible stuff all the way. Keep up the great work, fellas. Loving the podcast.
Yeah, somebody else brought this up earlier, but it's always funny to hear about it. Richard Lee, they had bones. They had fake bones in their caskets. Richard Lee, hey guys, haven't been on for a while, but first things first, I already thanked Way, but thanks again for the prizes for the rap contest, and especially the autographed Scorpion King 2 DVD. That really surprised me, even after my brother found out for me. Next, the WoW pay-per-view. Just had to watch that online. Just to watch that online really made me look for the toaster and the nearest bathtub and the Unforgiven show. It was fun to go back to the invasion angle, but maybe to finish it off, you should finish it with the 2001 Survivor Series to remind us how to end the bad angle. Now for the Tasteless Angle contest, I'm picking one that I haven't seen on the wall yet, and that one was the Big Show's dad's death angle with the Big Boss Man. Terminal cancer, crooked cops, and the towing away of the coffin with Big Show there. Hey, yet another car angle. Bad angle within a bad angle. That one should be classified as tasteless. Thanks again, guys. Loyal listener, Richard Lee.
Altamush Gadsdar. Maybe it's just me, but I've never been personally offended by a wrestling angle. Although there have been more than a few that have made me cringe and dropkick my IQ, John Cena style, I was never crazy about the Katie Vick deal or the Kiss My Ass Club segments, which got increasingly more ludicrous to explain away to my then-girlfriend. John, I burst out laughing hysterically when you mentioned your mom losing respect for you when she walked in on you watching some lame angle. I remember my mother walking in on me watching Mae Young's genetic miracle. She shook her head in disgust and left the room with a where-did-I-go-wrong look on her face.
Mm-hmm. That would do it. Jay Hunter. The most tasteless angle gimmick the WWF has done in my eyes is Eugene, the retard idiot savant. Genius, Vince. He can't tie his shoelaces but can wrestle competitively and safely. Sure, WWE hadn't exploited the stereotype yet, unless you count the numerous savage foreigners. Would Vince hire an actually mentally handicapped wrestler? God, no. But he'd have some wrestler impersonate one on TV. A stereotype complete with oblivious goodwill. Severely limiting IQ, arm flapping, palm only hand clapping, and a speech impediment. Seeing Nick Dinsmore badly act as a mentally handicapped person infuriates me every time. I didn't find wrestlers openly mocking him to his face entertaining. Linda McMahon probably thinks that the WWE did this disability a great service by having this inspirational gimmick. It saddened me that this gimmick actually got over, but maybe it's because he did what kids would do if they were wrestlers, i.e., do their favorite superstars' finishing moves. I thought we'd see the end of this gimmick when the crowd vociferously booed Eugene and Kurt Angle battered him at SummerSlam 2005. Nope. This gimmick lasted for another 2 years, which included a mild heel turn when he demanded a kiss from a diva and the crowd disapproved. WWE have no shame. I'm surprised WWE didn't book Eugene to take an unprotected chair shot to the head, which would cure him, turning him into an intelligent heel.
Aram Nasrallah, Way and John, this was for me the first time I really thought about how some people in wrestling could be a dumb fuck. Sid's leg is completely broken and they have him laying for I don't know how many minutes before they help him. I know that there have been other times where the show must go on, stuff like Over the Edge in 1999, which properly many others feel was more tasteless, but I didn't see it back then. But I did see Sin 2001 and was so disgusted that they didn't help Sid any faster. Poor, poor man. By the way, I heard an RVD interview where he said he was surprised when the cover of Wrong Side of Town came out, since he had a very large role in the movie, but Batista was on the cover of it. Have you ever watched the Hogan Celebrity Championship Wrestling TV show? Maybe that was something to review once. Keep it up, fellas. I've seen, I think, an episode or two.
I've seen it, too. It's so bad. It's awful. Maybe we will. Alex Kramars. The most offensive angle in professional wrestling had to be the back-to-back Raw, where first the locker room of the Nation of Domination was vandalized. Michael Cole was shown in the Nation's locker room and made a point of getting the camera to show the toilet paper all over the room and all of the offensive stuff spray-painted on the wall. JR makes sure we all notice the Canadian flag in the spray paint saying, "Don't cross the border," even though there is spray paint that says Malcolm X with the DX symbol replacing the X. As soon as they finish showing the entire area, the Nation is down at ringside in Vince's face yelling about racism in the WWF. On the very next Raw, it starts off with the Nation in the ring talking to Vince and blaming the Hart Foundation and challenging them to a match, calling Bret Hart a racist and saying he has done every racist thing you can think of except come to the ring in a white hood. So to recap, the Nation is blaming the Harts for the locker room incident. The Harts say they didn't do it, but are willing to fight the Nation anyway. And finally, DX, who clearly did vandalize the locker room, are fanning the flames and tainting both stables. The only one made to look good is Austin, who is not even part of the angle. The camera shows a fan in the crowd with a sign that says, "The Stunner knows no color. The bottom line." Oh. And Vince even uses one of Austin's catchphrases when he says, "We will not allow racism in the WWF under any circumstances, and that's the bottom line."
Which is hilarious in and of itself.
Three heel stables that are never given a chance to play the babyface, and Vince, the king, and Jim Ross screaming that racism has no place in the WWF. I still watch wrestling even after the angle died off, but I would say that my expectations on what lines wrestling would cross was thrown out the window. When white wrestlers are all racist, black wrestlers are all angry, and both are willing to fight even for no reason at the drop of a hat, according to Vince.
Alan Gaynor, the most tasteless angle was Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero fighting for custody of Dominic. Disgusting. The welfare of a child decided by the outcome of a fixed wrestling contest instead of in a court of law or in a legitimate arm wrestling match.
Dennis Amaya, one of the most tasteless angles happened in the Triple A promotion down in Mexico. Back in October of 2006, the promotion's founder, Antonio Peña, died and he was cremated. In October of 2008, Conan decided to take the ashes of the founder hostage and began to smoke them along with Teddy Hart and Jack Evans. Tasteless or not, this was all done and planned out by a man who said the WWE was out of line on the use of the Eddie Guerrero's name.
I hated that angle when it happened in AAA. It was, yes, not the greatest. No one's brought up either the angle they tried to do between Onita and Jose Gonzalez after the Bruiser Brody death.
Yes.
Robbie Cotterill. Gentlemen, I'm not sure if this qualifies as an angle or not. The mass transit incident is guaranteed to sicken any wrestling fan to the core. As evidently unconditioned, untrained, unprepared, unprotected non-wrestler is beaten chronically with his family, genuinely screaming for New Jack's legitimate and serious assault to stop. Sadly, the barrage of physical and mental violation for not only the participant, but also we the viewer heightens to a shocking climax. It's wrong, it's terrible, and it's downright disgusting. But it's also the absolute winner when it comes to a tasteless and tactless winner. If you refuse to accept it as an angle, I'll offer Colonel De Beers insisting that the AWA change the black referee for a white one.
Okay. Dashing Evan Harden. This by far has to be the most offensive and most embarrassing and most tasteless things WWE has ever done. This was back in Bad Blood 2003, and WWE decided to hold a redneck triathlon. Basically, it was a best 2 out of 3. It was between Stone Cold and Eric Bischoff. The events would be decided under a spin by the wheel. The first contest was a burping contest, which Stone Cold won. Then we get into a pie-eating contest. Stone Cold was up 1-0 at this point. Now, the reason I chose this particular contest was because it was terribly frightening to see a horny 80-year-old woman showing affection to a guy who was much younger than her. Just imagine having normal sex in bed with a senior, and it will bring a big censored logo to your head. Oh, my God. I just laugh for this choice.
And our final one is from Fulani. Most of what people have posted were more embarrassing to me just because I had to explain to my mom why Kane was electrocuting Shane's genitals in 2003. The one storyline that actually made me turn the TV off was the McMahon death angle in 2007. What was offensive was not him getting blown up, but the memorial the following week on Raw that was basically a parody of Eddie's tribute show and Raw as Owen. I wonder how guys like Edge, Bradshaw, and Mark Henry, etc., who had been in WWE/F when those guys passed, felt participating in that crap. Those nights and the tribute format are meant to be sacred and not used to push storylines. And actually, Mick Foley talks about this in his new book and basically says the exact same thing, that he hated that angle. So let's take a few seconds here, Way. I noted some of the ones that stood out for me.
Yeah.
This also we will judge based on your description of it and points that you bring up and not just the angle.
Out of those, I'd go with Pillman.
Pillman? Okay.
To me, that's just my own, because I guess it's one, like, I take into account how the scope and how much it's still talked about and how many people watched it and I suppose were offended by it. Whereas, like, the XPW one, not as many people saw it. Not to say that it's less offensive, but that's my own reasoning. Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay. I should include some of this in, because that was our explanation.
All right, well...
Okay, no, well...
You go ahead.
Okay, well, everyone, we have debated here amongst the tons of storylines and angles. Obviously, there's tons there. It's not like we can really rank these. They're
all somewhat, if you say they offended you, they were offensive. So we did narrow it down, and our winner is Sam Kennerly for sending in the one regarding the Melanie Pillman interview they did the night after Brian Pillman died at the Bad Blood, at the night after the Bad Blood pay-per-view in St. Louis in 1997. So thanks to everyone for sending in your ideas, your comments about this this contest. We got a ton of feedback. And as always, you can go to reviewaway.com on our Facebook page. You can leave suggestions for future shows for us to review. And you can also catch Review a Raw every Tuesday. We were a little late getting it up this past Tuesday. I was in Niagara Falls for most of the day, and traffic was awesome coming back. So we did get it up. So thanks to those of you who checked that out. And next week, Way, next week will be the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. So I thought we would do a review of the, you know, I had one in mind. I was going to do a Hell in a Cell match from like 2005, but I thought in light of this contest, we should do Bad Blood 97. And that was the night that Brian Pillman passed away. And it was also the very first Hell in a Cell match.
Oh, great.
The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. And maybe we can find that Raw as well from the next night.
More misery to come next week.
Well, we can look at this, the beginning of Hell in a Cell. And this was, yes, everyone was performing, I think, under the news that Pillman had passed away. So, are you cool with reviewing that?
No, I'm not, but I will.
We don't have to review that.
No, 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 it's a fine choice. I'm just, I don't know.
We don't have to. We can go with my other idea.
No, no, I think it's a great choice, actually. I'm just so tired. I'm so tired. I'm so tired, John.
Well, let's wrap this one up, then. It's been about 4 hours here.
No, what I mean is just, oh, my God. I don't know. I feel like we're fans, and we're so surrounded by
negativity,
by all this misery. And I mean, we're so desensitized to it now that we have to judge what actually offends us out of all of these things. And, like, I'll be honest, most of this stuff, when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, okay, this happens. It's completely normal within pro wrestling standards. I don't really question it. It's only when you look at it through a non-wrestling fan's eyes or somebody like that who's not involved in the industry that you really step back and think, wow, this is fucked up that this made it onto television for so many people to see.
All right, well, you've successfully brought me down in this, and I'm going to change my pick.
No, I want to watch that match, actually.
Are you
I
sure?
I want to see that match, yes.
Okay, we'll do it. And if anyone out there has a link, maybe, to the Raw the next night, I'm not promising we're going to watch the whole Raw as well, but maybe we can at least skim through it if that is online somewhere, because I cannot recall that show. It's tough to find Raws, but we'll review Bad Blood next week, featuring Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker in the very first Hell in a Cell match. And Way, do you have a tune to finish us off with?
I'd like to go out with not the opening credits to The Wrong Side of Town, but the end credits to The Wrong Side of Town, which is a rap version of the song that you talked about earlier, featuring Big Dog and Ox.
They couldn't get Ja Rule for a song.
No, he was dead. He was shot in the head. Remember?
Of course, that wouldn't be faithful to the story.
No.
All right, well, here we go with The Wrong Side of Town, the rap version.
Wrong side of town. I hit your ass up, like you're slipping out of bounds on the wrong side of town. Keep playing around here, get your ass laid down, homie. Wrong side of town. Hold a cow, Mac Lily, nigga, catch a couple rounds on the wrong side of town. They say I killed him, nigga. They say I stabbed him, homie. But it was self-defense. He was asking for it. Oh, hating ass nigga round the way. Sent the nigga on his way. Now it's paper on my face. Yeah, it's paper on my face. That ain't up in my waist. Got the whole hood hot. Yeah, I'm blowing out of trace. I'm posted in a corner. They got a nigga stuck. Harriet and Pharaoh. It's a cherry red chuck. It's a
cherry red chucks, big dog doing his thing in that 6'4" rag. Niggas know I can't. I ain't trying to fill me up with lead. These niggas want me dead. They was aiming for my head, but they hit me in the leg. It's murder, murder, murder. Kill, kill, kill. I was raised in the gutter. All I do is clap still. So let them keep coming. I'ma gun they ass down. But for now, they got me on the
wrong side of town.
I hit your ass up, but you slipping out of bounds on the
wrong side of town.
Keep playing around here, get your ass laid down, homie.
Wrong side of town.
For the Cal Mac Lily, nigga, catch a couple rounds on the
wrong side of town.
Yeah, nigga, come on. I'm low key, ride through the hood in the Nova, and I'm pushing them boulders. Nigga, I'm a hood soldier, hit them up. Big homie told me go and flip them over, rip them up. Get the clap and sip them like a Thriller jacket. They caught a nigga slipping behind enemy lines, and I'm running out of bullets like I'm running out of time. My nine just jammed, and I'm a hitman. Now a nigga hate his job, kinda like the homie Cam. They got me trapped off Washington in the Oaks. They chase a nigga down all through the liquor store. I crept out the back, threw away the cat. Had to jack the Japanese man boy's back. It's home sweet home, goddamn Killer Cali. Got a nigga feeling like Trey in that alley. A boy in the hood on the come up. Word to my little homies, never put your gun up. When you on the
wrong side of town,
I hit your ass up, you slipping out of bounds on the
wrong side of town.
Keep playing around here, get your ass laid down, homie.
Wrong side of town.
For the Cal Mac Millie, nigga, catch a couple rounds on the
wrong side of town.
Nigga, you on the wrong side of town.
Yeah.
Big dog, riding through that city slow, 2 miles per hour. Nigga, you see that 6'4", 17 by 9 days, homie. Smile for the camera, you know they hate, homie. I'm $1 million motherfucking nigga. That's why I keep my finger on the techno trigger. Yelling, so woo! Niggas can feel the pain. That nigga gang know about the D to Diva Lane. He know about that F1, switcher, four lanes, red line, flat line. Nigga, it's all the same. I don't love these hoes, so when they trip my bitch, be a 45th and a presidential zip. And say I got the swag of Biggie in the praises of Mossberg. Oh shit, it's the resurrection of 4-bit. No tint on my phone, no sense in my brain. So run up on my shit and feel that flame on the
wrong side of town.
I hit your ass up, you slipping out of bounds on the
wrong side of town.
Keep playing around here, get your ass laid down, homie.
Wrong side of town.
For the Cal Mac Lily, nigga, catch a couple rounds on the
wrong side of town.